be a problem with, for instance, youngsters who are working with daycare facilities who may have delivery of controlled substances to them. It may be a narrow problem, but we'd be addressing that. But I think Representative Baum has raised an interesting issue as to whether or not we should just move away from the geographical limitation. I like the idea of just saying for controlled substances generally, delivery to a, I would leave it to a minor. I don't know why we have to add student anymore. If we just said to a minor,
how about a person?
Anyone under 18, it's Class A felony.
How about a person?
Well, I'm certainly open to that, Mr. Chairman. And maybe the compromises ought to be in the Senate, and we might as well
usually
have
where they are.
Cards and chips in our stack to deal with.
Well, I would be in favor of developing the best policy that we possibly can, and to the extent that others don't agree with us, we'll have an opportunity to visit with them. Oops. Representative Baum?
I'd still like to throw out for the committee consideration the concept of requiring that any delivery of a controlled substance in the state to, at the very least, of course, we have that for minors, but to any delivery, to any person, be considered a Class A felony.
Representative Baum, let me just ask, and maybe Representative Mannix, since, again, this is your bill, if we could get to where Representative Baum wants to go, that's one issue. Number two is, did you want to create really this zone of special protection for our children? And I wonder, and I don't know how law enforcement would treat this, but obviously if it was enhanced in this particular area, maybe their vigilance is greater.
Mr. Chairman?
And maybe we almost dilute, if it is your effect, to try to protect further areas where children are, maybe we dilute that by saying it is the same penalty for delivery anywhere.
Mr. Chairman, I do think that the one way to achieve the, I'll call it narrower focus, but a balanced approach here would be to take out the restriction on students or minors on 1,000 feet, a delivery to anybody within 1,000 feet of a school or a delivery to anybody within 1,000 feet of a certified daycare facility is a Class A felony. That creates the zone, special zone of protection with enhanced penalties around schools and daycare facilities, and it means we won't have four-year-olds around adults delivering drugs to other adults. And that really furthers the social concept that this bill was all about. There will be another bill that can address, I think it's House Bill 2580, the broader question of manufacture and possession. This is just a delivery bill. And we'd have an enhanced penalty for any, in effect, any trading or dealing in drugs within 1,000 feet of places where kids congregate.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. Representative Baum.
Representative Mannix, tell me, if we got a statute, like Mr. Verdinke says, where we've got minors, delivery to minors, already enhanced to a felony, and I'm not certain that I didn't check it in the statute, then what are we really accomplishing by this 1,000 feet if the police already have the ability, if it's a minor involved, you know what I'm talking about, to bust them for an A felony if they're delivering to minors?
That was only Class 1 or 2 controlled substances.
Well, yeah, that would be the cocaine and the crack and the tar heroin and the heavy-duty drugs. I guess that would leave off marijuana. And bill would apply to marijuana.
We're not exempting anything right now.
So the only difference would be, if we pass this, would be give the police the option within 1,000 feet of school to bust people for delivering marijuana.
No, because there are also other drugs, and perhaps...
in addition to what's already allowed under the law, if you're a minor, delivering to minors, you're already going to charge with an A felony if you deliver Category 1 or 2 drugs.
I don't know if I gave the right numbers. There's two categories of the drugs, and I think there's actually four categories, which I was about to check in the statute as to... classes of drugs. And we've got some folks out here who deal with this every day who can help us. I'm looking for the list of drugs in the statute. Four, seven, five.
Jim McIntyre. Would you like to be a resource in this particular hearing?
I'll try and see if I can help. We'll see how that goes.
Thank you.
I'm Jim McIntyre in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. As to delivery to minors, 475995, the only schedules that are specifically stated are schedules 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. They cover all of the schedules that are under the Food and Drug Administration drug schedules. Within those schedules, schedule 1, marijuana is a schedule 1 drug. All right, marijuana, hashish, any of its derivatives are schedule 1. LSD is schedule 1. The designer drugs are schedule 1 drugs, MDA, DMAs. Heroin is a Schedule 1. Cocaine, methamphetamine are Schedule 2 drugs. Under 475995, delivery of cocaine, methamphetamine, LSD or heroin would be a Class A felony. The delivery of marijuana to a minor under 995, regardless of your geographic location, would be a Class A felony, and it's regardless of also quantity. It is a Class A felony, but it's only a Class A felony if the defendant is 18 years of age, that is, you're dealing with an adult, and the delivery of marijuana to a person less than 18 is that the person must be at least 3 years younger than the defendant. And what happened here was there was a concern, basically, of not grabbing in the Class A felony net the high school friends, recent high school graduate type people dealing with their buddies and friends in high school back when they had the marijuana laws initially established under that scheme. There is no quantity required, as I said, no quantity required nor location required. If you have an 18-year-old delivering to a 14-year-old, it's going to be a Class A felony.
May I inquire?
Representative Mannix.
Is it fair to say that dealers like playgrounds and schoolyards, open space that are away from roads and so forth, so that that's one reason why there's a great deal of activity going on in those areas?
Well, actually, especially in the marijuana area, because marijuana is usually sold in dime bags, small quantities, and readily accessible problems. The 1,000 feet, my understanding is the 1,000 feet limit in the Oregon law, as it was passed out both of this committee and then ultimately in the last legislature, was sort of part and parcel to the federal law, because there's a federal law with strong federal sanctions. The difficulty is that oftentimes the United States Attorney's Office, it's been my experience, is not quick to grasp these small quantity sales, even within the close proximity of a school district.
May I question further?
Representative Mannix.
How would you react to us taking out the delivery to student or minor exemption and just saying delivery within 1,000 feet of a school and then 1,000 feet of a certified daycare facility?
Well, I think that my reaction is would be a good idea. When you say, by saying student or minor, you are there's an additional problem with proof of what the buyer is. It's conceivable that you could do a prosecution on a delivery. We have done prosecutions on delivery where we never do get the buyer. The buyer gets away. If the buyer has gotten away and the buyer isn't, we have no way of proving the buyer to be either a minor or a student. Yet we may have a complete videotape, and I mean literally a videotape, of the actual drug sale. But without being able to prove that we're dealing with a student or a minor, we're dealing with just a delivery of a 10 gram or a 1 gram bag of marijuana.
So Representative Baum?
You heard our discussion about making all deliveries A felonies and letting the chips fall where they may, since we're keep making exceptions to the trying to reach more and more people and more geography. What would that do to the scheme of law enforcement if we just said delivery is an A felony of any drug?
Well, I think you'd be making a very clear statement to drug dealers in the state of Oregon. I think that quite honestly, your fiscal impact would be incredible, especially in view of the sentencing guidelines and the fact that because of the space problem, you're talking about presumptive probation sentences.
For A felonies?
For A felony drug deliveries, and I don't have the guidelines grid with me, but as I recall, even among first and second offenders, there's still presumptive probationary sentences. And even multiple offenders only get 12 to 18.
Okay, so what
months.
When you talk about fiscal impact, excuse me, Mr. Chair, what are we really talking about? If these people aren't going to go to prison for committing an A felony,
you know, kind of give me the fit, because before the argument was we did this in the previous session. We tried to send a message, and it got into ways and means, and for whatever reasons, fiscal argument service, you know, usually when those of a more liberal persuasion want to fight a bill that toughens drug laws, then it disappears and becomes, you know, a violation again, the criminality is gone, and all this stuff, and for a fiscal reason. Now, with sentencing guidelines out there, when you say a substantial fiscal impact, to me, it would be nice to have that option that for the law enforcement to come in to someone that has two or three of these things on his record, and when they bust him, they all happen to catch him for marijuana and a little teeny amounts of other stuff that, you know.
Absolutely.
It would be great to have that option in that case, because minors are going to be treated as minors, juveniles, in juvenile court. They're not going to, my understanding is, if they get the 17-year-old gets busted for delivering drugs to a young kid without any of these exceptions, they're treated in juvenile court, right?
The juvenile buyer may be treated in juvenile
court. Well, or juvenile seller to another juvenile.
Correct, juvenile court.
In juvenile court, and that can be disposed of without necessarily ruining that kid's record for life if he's under 18.
Correct.
And I just see us getting real cute with exceptions here, and what we want to send a message is drug delivery in this state is not going to be tolerated, and the fiscal impact, I think, under sentencing guidelines, who's going to go to prison for the first time?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mason.
Well, I think one of the things the committee should be aware of, and that is that using the term delivery is not synonymous with sale. Under our current case law, you can be charged with delivery and no sale have ever occurred. The quantity itself can be constructive delivery, and there is the doctrine of constructive delivery. Now, Mr. McIntyre can probably cite the case I can't write off the top of my head. But I think the committee should be aware of the difference between delivery and delivery for consideration, which is something we consider another bill, but they are not the same thing. The term delivery is very broad under our current case law.
Thank you, Representative Mason. We'll take a look at that. I personally would be of the opinion that whether you're going to deliver it or deliver it for consideration, you shouldn't have it. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to ask our experts' advice here on. I note that 475.995 that you mentioned before, other than the marijuana from a 18-year-old to someone under 18 within 3 years, other than that exception, any delivery to a minor of drugs is already set out in 995, and Class 1 or 2 is a Class A felony to minors. You mentioned before what was in Class 1. What's in Class 2?
Cocaine, methamphetamine. I'm giving you, the list is very long,
okay.
Actually. The most common street drugs that we're dealing with, and wish Lieutenant Bonneau was still here, he could address this better, but cocaine and methamphetamine are the ones that first jump to mind as Schedule II drugs that we deal with regularly.
All right. And those Schedule II ones in 992 are, if you deliver them to an adult,
are Class B felony.
Class B felony. So that's, if that helps Representative Baum at all,
they're still felony offenses.
We're really talking about moving from a Class B to a Class A on delivery of at least these top two categories to adults. That's what you're suggesting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I just think we've gotten real cute at trying to make these cute little exceptions to the law, and we actually have laws on the books that encourage delivery of drugs to minors. Among minors. You know, it's kind of funny that we try to make little exceptions for certain areas while we just ought to send a clear message and let the chips fall where they may. Because minors will be taken care of in juvenile court, and if it's their only true time that they get in trouble, then they can go on with life.
Oh, I want to get this straight. Remember we were talking last week about delivery for consideration? Do not the vast majority of what we've been talking about here, would the 18-year-old kid fit in delivery for consideration?
If I might,
yes, sir. Mason.
They would, and much of the time there indeed is consideration, but there is such a thing as constructive delivery, and you can be charged with delivery
by circumstances other than cash obtained. And I believe there's even a case that says that if on quantity itself, check me if I'm right, will almost get you into delivery in a certain situation. What's the case?
Well, Representative Mason's referring to is a case called State versus Boyd. Yes, it came out of Multnomah County. Yeah. And that was the first case that the Court of Appeals addressed the issue directly. Within the definition of delivery, they state that delivery is defined, it's within the statute, that delivery is defined as attempted, constructive, or actual delivery. And what happened in the Boyd case was law enforcement officers, and I believe they executed a search warrant, but they came up with all of the indicia of attempting to deliver. That is, they had a combination of scales and packaging material and money and a small quantity of drugs. And what happened was that case was prosecuted and Ms. Boyd was convicted for actually attempting to deliver, but it came within the purview of delivery, so she was convicted of delivery.
But that means it's almost a conspiracy if it's...
The courts found it to be enough evidence to constitute an intentional, substantial step towards actually delivering drugs, so therefore it was found to be delivery of a controlled substance.
When we were talking about, I'm not really very familiar with the sentencing guidelines, but when I was so concerned when we were talking about this other bill, is that a single sale from an 18-year-old to an 18-year-old was 18 months, as I remember. Now, I don't see what we're talking about here would be the same thing, and you've said it would be probation. And you probably weren't here when we were talking about that, but no. In my mind, I can't separate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Representative Mason.
One of the reasons why 2390, the scheme or network bill, was phrased in terms of delivery for consideration was, and Mr. McIntyre may have, it was to avoid the Boyd situation, which is, got a little flexible. There's a second case, and it's Judge Walker's favorite case because he was defense counsel on it, where there was a woman in a bedroom, and there was drugs in the other room, and that was where the court said that was not constructive possession.
That's the constructive possession.
Yeah, it was not constructive, but you do have a thing called constructive possession also, and as we're going to talk lawyer here for a moment. We lawyers know whenever the word constructive comes out, watch out. Remember constructive trusts and constructive this and constructive that. But there is the doctrine of constructive delivery and constructive possession, and that's why 2390 was fairly circumscribed. From my own view, I have no problem with these enhanced penalties at all, but I would like them enhanced based on delivery for consideration because I want it the real thing. And it goes back and forth, you know. And Boyd might have been a good case, but we're still working with Boyd and living with Boyd, you got to understand that the delivery is a little bit more than here's the dope, Polly, you know, that type of thing. Sorry, can't see.
No, Mr. Mason, we had that.
It happened to you last session.
Yeah, it happened at the end of the marijuana hearing last session.
Yeah, that was delivery at the end of the week. He walked up and this, you weren't here for this, at the end of our last marijuana bill. As my gavel came down, a man got out of the audience, walked up, and gave me attempted to give me a bag of marijuana.
But you said you don't accept gratuities.
During
so
the
move
session.
Along.
Mr.
Where's that Mannix?
Since we're in work session, although I'm a visitor to the committee from the main committee, am I allowed to propose changes, make motions, not vote on them? I know I can't vote.
You'd express
Chair.
Oh, we've got two of you.
There's two of us. From experience, the proper protocol is to suggest helpful motions and amendments and to see if someone will pick up the suggestion and run with it.
Now, Representative Mannix, before you go that far, I want to make sure that, because I'm trying to follow the lead of Representative Baum and Representative Mason in maybe moving for a felony treatment for any delivery of drugs for consideration, since they've opened the door and led the way on this regard. And if that, what's the census of the committee on that kind of proposal?
It's up tomorrow in Scheme and Network.
There'll be another, Mr. Chairman.
There'll be a whole bunch of rating clauses floating around the building,
be another bill where you can probably get to the delivery for consideration, and you could use that concept in another bill. This bill would allow you to look at the concept of setting aside geographic zones to protect children, but not necessarily say delivery to child. That's where I wanted to suggest as a concept, should anyone wish to make the motion, that the bill be amended so that on line 7, you are deleting to a student or a minor, which is a limitation in this law. And that on line 10, you add the phrase after ORS 418.805 and 418.810, which adds in the clear definition of what is a certified daycare center. And what you would have done then, well, I'll just read this. Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bryan.
I'd move those amendments.
Okay.
Representative Bryan moves those amendments. Now,
bring
the chair up to date. What are those amendments?
The amendments would be the deletion of the words in line 7 to a student or a minor, and the addition in line 10 after ORS 418.805 add and ORS 418.810, which is the definition of certified daycare facility.
Right, is there a discussion of the motion? Representative Mannix.
What this does is get us back to the thrust of the measure with the chair's idea of saying any delivery to a person within this, what we hope will be a drug-free zone, creates the atmosphere of drug activity that we're trying to protect our children from, and that gets us back on track there with an enhanced penalty and a drug-free zone around schools and daycare facilities. And I don't care if it's two 18-year-olds dealing. What matters is the drugs being within that zone of protection. And it leaves out other issues for another time as to enhanced penalties generally and so on and so forth, but it does make it an enhanced penalty in that situation. Taking out the student or minor restriction and saying, if you deliver to a person within 1,000 feet of a school or daycare center, here is the enhanced penalty.
I did not hear in the proposed amendment the insertion of the word a person.
Yeah,
I guess I just heard the deletion, but
well,
did you add a
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
On line 6, I assume that to deliver a controlled substance would do the trick, because in the definition section of, may I? 475, Chapter 475, there is a definition of delivery.
Point 991, Mr. Representative Mannix.
475.005 sub 8. Deliver or delivery means the actual constructive or attempted transfer, other than by administering or dispensing from one person to another of a controlled substance, whether or not there is an agency relationship. And that definition would fit, so we're talking about delivery to a person.
Is there anything...
But we could say that in the bill to make it clear.
Less artful about including the words a person?
We could say that on line 6, Mr. Chairman, to deliver a controlled substance to a person, colon, and then pick up with Representative Bryan's amendments.
Friendly Mr. Chair, with all due respect to Representative Johnson, I think the definition you want is in 475.005
yeah.
sub 8.
I understand. I'm not,
thank you.
In light of that, I'm not sure what the 1 and 991 adds, but there's two definitions there.
Further discussion on the motion?
My only comment
Representative Baum.
Is that there'll be other opportunities maybe this week for us to move, and maybe in the interest of political tactics, it would be best to use another bill for really sending a strong message out. And so I want to intend I'm going to make that same motion soon, another bill, the appropriate relating clause. So I'm going to support the amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to ask Representative Mannix, since this is his bill, what is it your intent, and I just give throw out an example here, if there was a school or a daycare facility that was unoccupied during the summer months, for example, does this 1,000-foot safe zone apply even when kids are nowhere in sight and haven't been for months, or I mean, is that the intent of the bill?
Yes, because that's still a gathering spot.
Thank you.
Representative Mason?
As I read the bill and its proposed amendment, it does two things. It adds the 1,000 feet of the certified daycare center, and then secondly, it takes out the student or minor within 1,000 feet of a school. If I got that right, okay.
That's
and
correct.
I think there was a friendly amendment by the chairman to say to a person on line 6.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, although I've In discussion, I thought you had just simply deleted student or a minor, and therefore I was reading 2A within. So I'm content with deleting the words to a student or a minor. And then that sentence to me makes sense.
Yeah. You've got any person up in that line?
Correct.
Six.
Thank you. Further discussion on the motion? Not the amendment is adopted. Further discussion of the bill?
Chair.
Representative Bryan.
I'd move House Bill 2502 as amended to the full committee with a due pass.
Representative Bryan moves House Bill 2502 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
The committee has decided then on the policy of this only applying to daycares and school buildings.
In this particular bill, that's my impression. We may have an opportunity at some later time to be even more expansive.
We discussed what you tried to lead out on there, Representative Baumann, about all making them all A felonies, and we decided there'd be another relating clause coming on within a few days that we could use that for.
Further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Baum?
Yes.
Representative Baumann?
Aye.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Sinceri?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
Votes aye. The bill is passed to the full committee. Close the work session on House Bill 2502. Thank you, Mr. McIntyre. Thank you. We will now open the work session, hearing. Public hearing on House Bill 2543. Council, would you like to preview that measure for us?
I'd be happy to. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what House Bill 2543 attempts to do is establish that for persons convicted of rape 1, sodomy 1, sexual penetration, and sex abuse 1, the first three of which are Class A felonies, the last of which is a Class C felony, that for the purposes, at least in Section 1, the term of post-prison supervision would be equal to the maximum statutory indeterminate sentence, which on felonies would be 20 years, and which under for a Class A felony would be 20 years, under a Class B it would be 10, and that costs incurred could be increased by post-prison supervision fees. I would note that is in an increase from the current post-prison supervision term of 3 years as established under sentencing guidelines. Section 2 deals with probation and extends the current time from a window of minimum of 5 years to whatever the maximum statutory indeterminate sentence would be. I would also point out for the committee's information, and Representative Clark is here and might want to address this further, the Family Justice Subcommittee is working very diligently on a bill that would require sex offender registration, and it would cover the four offenses that are included in this bill. And that's it for now.
Thank you, learned counsel. Representative Mannix.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kevin Mannix, state representative from District 32, covering Central and Northeast Salem. I will defer in a moment to Russ Spencer and the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I simply wanted to say that House Bill 2543 is another bill in the right direction in regard to these kinds of offenders. I do think there's a distinction to be made in regard to this bill as compared to the bill which is in front of Family Justice. That has to do with registration of sex offenders and extension of the time in which they have to maintain their registration after their time of supervision has been completed, parole or probation. This bill deals with how long they ought to be under supervision, under parole or probation, and extends the time that they ought to be under supervision by saying that so long as that you have to remain under such supervision for the maximum indeterminate sentence that applies for the offense. That's the thrust of this bill, and it would involve extended supervision of offenders. There will probably be some discussion of a fiscal impact as a result of that, because you are going to have offenders who are going to be kept under supervision for a substantially longer time than they are right now. Again, I would distinguish this from the registration bill, which maintains information as to where the offender is located, but does not maintain any program of supervision. And if I may, I'd otherwise defer to the other witnesses and join the committee.
Thank you very much, Representative Mannix. We'll defer the grilling of your testimony until later. Mr. McIntyre, Mr. Spencer, please. And perhaps, Mr. Robson, do you want to come at this time? With? All right, you're in the next wave. That's...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Russ Spencer. I'm representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association today, and the next series of bills that you're going to be hearing are sponsored at our request. Very briefly, I just want to let you know how these came about. We convened a task force made up of deputy district attorneys, sheriff's department investigators, some legislative personnel, and sheriffs to come up with a small package of bills that we felt would make a significant impact in helping our people to prosecute these cases and helping to protect the public safety. In doing so, we solicited input from every single sheriff and every single district attorney in the state of Oregon, as well as going through a number of meetings in order to craft what we thought and what we hope will be well thought out legislation. Other than that, I'm here to provide support for Mr. McIntyre, and I will throw him to you.
For example, maybe after the three-year period where this bill would take its effect. Right now, they'd be on 3 years anyway. So maybe after 3 years, when we're getting into this, shall we say, bonus time, at that point, maybe the fees could be structured to have increased. Maybe by that time, these people are employed and resuming somewhat normal life. And I guess that's the issue, is can the fees be structured in a lot of these cases at that point, after giving a 3 years lead time, to better support their own program, their own supervision?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryan, perhaps, and I would need to look at the statute on supervision fees. It is set at $25, and what it provides for is a waiver of reducing it or waiving it altogether. I don't know that it says maximum. I'd have to look at that statute, so I don't have that in front of me. But if you're correct on the statute, then yes, that could be done, I suppose, within the offender's ability to pay, and that's how it's usually determined by the court and the Board of Post-Prison Supervision.
Do we have a copy of that statute?
I would have expected that, Learned Counsel. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The registration option that you mentioned briefly, I understand that's being dealt with currently in another bill, so there is not a registration system in Oregon right now.
Chairman Miller, Representative Johnson, yes, there is a statute currently. It was passed last biennium to register sex offenders for anyone who is under supervision of the Department of Corrections and to continue that registration for 5 years after release from supervision, and that is on the books today. There is a bill to amend that statute to expand it and to create it, essentially the lifetime provision.
Lifetime registration,
right.
Provision.
But we do have it currently for the time period I just mentioned.
And I assume that registration is cheaper than supervision.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, registration is essentially putting the information into the computer and then just updating it based on the address change.
Okay. There's been mentioned a couple different times about how these people, other than as opposed to a normal criminal, are able to support themselves and pay for some of their supervision costs. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see anything in this bill that specifically directs any court or anybody else to require that these people pay for their post-supervision costs. Is there something somewhere else that gives them the right or the power to? Well, I'm sorry. There's a sentence that refers to it. Is that a mandatory thing?
It says shall be paid.
Okay.
Mandatory.
And that, does that take care of your concerns? she's saying they don't have money to pay for it.
It might, if in fact they can actually pay for that, if okay. We could determine that could in fact be paid and collected, okay. And what the cost, we'd have to determine the cost.
And you haven't been able to make an estimate of how much you would believe would not be paid over what should be paid? I mean,
yeah. Chairman Miller and Representative Johnson, currently the reason that is difficult for us to determine, and I would be happy to do whatever work I could for the committee to see if, in fact, we could get that kind of information, is today we collect supervision fees from virtually all offenders are required to give us supervision fees. A portion of those offenders do give them to us. We, in our data system, have how many supervision fees are paid totally. We don't have it separated by sex offenders. So I would need to see if there's a way, even in the data system, to determine how many of our sex offenders are paying and what they're paying and what their ability to pay would be, and then the cost of supervising those offenders and see if that matched or whether or not it needed to be increased.
Thank you.
That's why I was a bit hesitant on that point.
Appreciate it.
Representative Johnson, Mr. Robson may have a little additional comment on that, if you would.
By Mr. May, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson, situation in a lot of counties who don't have their own polygrapher, I do know for a fact they do charge for that particular test, and the offenders do. And so there are some additional fees that can be requested, and they do pay those. The other thing that I'd like to address, too, is the registration situation. I think it can be an enhancement to have this registration, but it doesn't do any monitoring. All it does is require the individual to register, and if they don't do so, the only time we catch up with them is if they happen to be stopped or arrested again for that offense and find out that they were a prior offender and haven't registered. So I think it's an enhancement, but it doesn't take care of the post-prison or incarceration, probation, or parole that could enhance the control.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. McIntyre had one final comment on this, and then we need to move on to the other witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, there's one thing that, from a practical standpoint, in handling these cases day in and day out, there are many, many cases, and I agree with the testimony before, that many of these offenders need to go to the penitentiary and stay there. But there are also a large percentage who have a very strong support group. They have a very strong support group within the community, within their families, who are amenable to treatment and probation. And what I'm thinking is, and that in practical application, by the enactment of this bill, you will see a reduction in the amount of offenders actually going to the penitentiary. Because as a prosecutor, I will have the opportunity now to offer long-term supervision for 10, 15, 20 years that I do not have at this time. So I will have the opportunity to keep someone under control within the community for a much longer period of time. Right now, it is to my benefit as a protector of the society and the community to put them in the penitentiary. Because that gives me the longest amount of time.
Just to ask one thing about that, your last point on you had would have additional ability and authority to supervise them in the community. And as you may know, we've had bills in this committee that have caused offenders to go back to the community in which they resided when they committed the crime. What is your authority with respect to if you say I want somebody under supervision for 10 years, are they restricted to a particular community for that long, or can they, if they decide to make a new life in another state, are they pretty much free to go, or how's it work?
It's part of it is within the discretion of the parole and probation office whether or not they can ask permission to travel. As to restrictions, we have no law in Oregon that authorizes, that I'm aware of, a court to restrict and maintain that a person stay in one place, in one location.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bryan.
Thank you. I guess the question of the testimony here, does the court, when they sentence, whether now or under this bill, does the court, what kind of opportunity is there for periodic review? In other words, if you have a 10-year sentence under this statute or a 20-year sentence, what capability is there for review under some significant change of circumstance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, I think currently beyond the probation, there is no review. Even if they've been sentenced to a particular period of time, and that is either deferred in lieu of probation, or they've served a short incarcerated time and then probation, if they, even if it was beyond the 10 years or 20 years, there is no way of reviewing it at that time unless they happen to be picked up again. We know that that happens. I've arrested people 81 years old for offending.
Chairman, if I inquire further.
Representative Bryan.
Do you think there's any need under this bill where there's a potential 20-year sentence, you know, in the interest of justice? Are there cases, would you suspect, where, you know, 20 years of reporting and supervision might not be appropriate, or after 10 or 15 years something changes, the person ages, changes, and matures, and all these other things that could possibly happen, and yet he's going to be reporting, both burdening him, burdening the system as well as the person for 20 years. Is there, do you think we need some sort of check along the way?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking whether this bill would facilitate that in the 20-year period, or is there a need to do such?
Is there a need to do such? Because I don't see any here.
Well, the bill would allow that in that if they're under supervision for that extended period of time, that that would be the mandate of the probationary system, even though it may be reduced probation, where home visits would not have to take place after a particular period of time. There would still have to be a monthly report going on, and I would assume also the other restrictions or requirements that were proposed at the time of probation would still be in effect, such as a six-month polygraph responsibility or so on.
Chair, if I may further.
Yes, Representative Bryan, continue this public hearing. We will go into work session, perhaps.
Thank you. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, as the agency providing the supervision, whether there would be, do you have the authority, or whether do you think it would be good to create the authority that at some point you may want to go back to the judge and say, after 10 years or 15 years of this, we don't think we need to be involved further.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bryan, I think at least at this time the state of the art is that I don't think that that ability would be to the best interest of society, in that we don't have anything that shows us that these people will turn around. Like I indicated, they seem to be this lifestyle until death. However, I would imagine that review could be had and some modifications could be made. I don't know about under what vehicle.
Further questions, Representative Bryan?
No, I think there's a further statement.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, if I could just respond to that last question of yours. Under Section 2 of the Act, this doesn't modify anything relative to the court's authority to supervise probation. And what I mean by that is that of many of the questions that you raised, the court has the authority to do. The court can order, if the court wants to, daily reports on the progress of the defendant. The court can alter and modify from more restrictive to less restrictive conditions without there even having been a violation, because the order can read treatment, evaluation, and monitoring per the probation officer. So the probation and parole department could come in at any time and, assuming the defendant was in compliance, continue the reporting. If the defendant was not in compliance, then there would be a probation violation that the court could determine whether to continue probation or whether or not to sentence the defendant to incarceration.
And the defendant probably could ask the court for a review.
In fact, that still occurs, where defendants even now will petition and ask for what's called early termination of probation, showing full compliance, and the probation officers oftentimes join in that request and that recommendation.
That's the answer that I was looking for here. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. Mr. Fedanke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm David Fedanke, Associate Director, ACLU of Oregon. I just wanted to share some information with you that I became aware of as a member of the Lane County Community Corrections Advisory Committee, on which I've served for the last 6 years. We have in Lane County what I think is a model sex offender treatment program but it's not cheap. The figures in front of you show that, as you can see, there are about 225 sex offenders under parole and probation supervision in the Lane County area as of last September. 30 of those were in a publicly funded program through Community Corrections Act for indigent offenders. There were another 31 awaiting entry into that program. Now, that amounts to about 20% of the offenders, the sex offenders, under supervision in Lane County. I don't know if those figures hold throughout the state. I discussed this proposal with the branch manager of Lane County Parole and Probation, and he confirmed for me that what my suspicion was, which is basically if this proposal were put into effect, there would be a significantly increased number of sex offenders under supervision. And I guess what I want to get across to you today is that there are a significant number of folks out there that need treatment, that cannot afford private treatment. And I don't have any problem with attempts to get those folks into treatment and keep them there as long as is necessary. But I think it clearly would have a fiscal impact, and I hope the committee will attempt to come to grips with that. We cannot expect all sex offenders to pick up the costs of that treatment because there is a significant portion of them that don't have the resources. And to give you an idea of what kind of supervision some of these offenders have by parole and probation, again, Lane County has an intensive supervision program for sex offenders. If you look at the second page of the information I've given to you, and by the way, this information, at least the first page, is part of the Lane County Community Corrections Plan for the coming biennium. The second page is from some supporting documents that were presented to our committee while we were considering that plan. Most of these offenders are under high supervision.
Excuse me, Representative Park.
Yeah.
I want to add a couple observations. I don't think anybody's talking about treating these people, which maybe is a problem, but they're talking about supervising them. And the second thing is I'm curious how much the program cost. You said it was very expensive.
Well, it's not very expensive compared to some of the other alternatives, like prison.
Right.
It's certainly cheaper than prison and far preferable, but the resources available for those types of alternative programs in the community are very limited. And what I wanted to get across to you was exactly the point you were trying to get at. What kind of supervision is there of sex offenders currently? Under high supervision, and again, this is Lane County information, I assume it's similar around the state, high supervision means 3.6 hours of work by a parole or probation officer per month. That means two face-to-face contacts plus one face-to-face contact in the home. That's not a lot of contact. If you increase the number of offenders that are under supervision, sex offenders that are under supervision, one of two things has to happen. Either you have to increase the number of parole and probation officers to supervise them, or an increasing number are going to get bumped down into the medium and low category, or other types of offenders are going to get bumped down into those categories. Actually, the low supervision categories has all but disappeared. More than half of all people on parole or probation in Lane County are now in a limited supervision category, which is essentially a case bank and no supervision at all. None of the sex offenders are in that category, and we want to keep it that way in Lane County. But that comes at a cost. And I guess I just wanted to get across to you some real live numbers of a snapshot of one county and what's happening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Danke. Further questions? If not, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2543? If not, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2543. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2543. their discussion of House Bill 2543. Representative Johnson, your rewrite.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To correct a potential constitutional deficiency in the statute, we need to make sure that the combination of the post-prison supervision and the imprisonment period do not exceed the maximum sentence that would have been sentenced, you could have been sentenced to in the first place. So to make sure that we cover that, starting after the first two words in line six, and delete the words equal to, and then insert the following amendment. I move that this amendment be made, okay? Which shall continue until the term of post-prison supervision, comma, when added to the term of imprisonment served, comma, equals, and then pick up the rest of it, equals the maximum statutory indeterminate sentence for the violation.
All right. Would you read that one more time, Representative Johnson? We'll
on line six, delete equal to and insert in its place, which shall continue until the term of post-prison supervision, comma, when added to the term of imprisonment served, comma, equals.
Right. Does everyone understand the amendment? Is there a discussion of the proposed amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Not, it is adopted. Further amendment, Representative Johnson?
No.
Further discussion of the bill, Representative Parks?
I move House Bill 2543
Representative Parks moves House Bill 2543 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion, Representative Parks?
I'd like to discuss it. It always bothers me when we keep bumping crimes up to A and B and putting people in jail. I know that reads great in the Oregonian that today that we've incarcerated somebody, but I think we kid ourselves when we do that, and it bothers me because what we really do is in programs like these, we bump people down. These programs, I think, work. We don't even know what we're doing in this area, but I think they work if we get a high level of supervision at a fraction of the cost. And so a lot of times I'm not in favor of just what I call nuking them, which is what I think we do a lot of. Because I think we do it at a sacrifice to these kind of programs. I think these programs really deserve a real shot, and I don't think there's enough money to do the program, but I think we ought to set it up, and then we'll worry about the money later. And I think it does have a lot more of a fiscal impact, but to me, you get more bangs for the bucks if you keep them on the street.
Thank you, Representative Parks. Further discussion on the motion?
Call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Just a moment. I'll recognize you in a second. Counsel? Thank you. If there is no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll on the motion to pass the bill to the full committee. Do pass.
Representative Baum?
Shown as excused.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Cenceri?
Aye.
Chair Miller?
Votes aye. Bill is passed to the full committee. Representative Parks, would you be so kind as to carry that? Thank you. Close the work session on House Bill 2543. Now we will open the public hearing on House Bill 2545. Counsel, do you want to give us a brief opening on that bill?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill also comes to the committee at the request of the Sheriff's Association. What it does is create
two new crimes, child neglect in the first degree, child neglect in the second degree, which basically would entail knowingly leaving a child or allowing a child to stay in primarily what are known as drug houses or other kinds of situations, and then modifies the current statute of child neglect, which is merely leaving a child for a period of time likely to endanger their health, which is currently a Class A misdemeanor. I would also just point out to the committee that in your packet you will find a copy of the statute 163.575, which is endangering the welfare of a minor, which currently has a provision that talks about knowingly permitting a person under 18 to remain in a place where there is unlawful activity involving controlled substances, and the witnesses might want to address the need for both.
Thank you, counsel. I'd like to call Mr. McIntyre and Mr. Spencer. Inclined to give the committee and the audience a brief recess so that they could stand up and stretch, but since everyone is getting up and coming forward and then returning to their seats on a regular basis, I guess there's no need. So please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Russ Spencer with the State Sheriff's Association, and I'm going to be reading the statute that learned counsel had pointed out, so I will defer to Mr. McIntyre.
Thank you.
And hope he reads faster than I do.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm familiar with the statute that counsel has pointed out, and we also need to look at 163.545, which is the statute that's would be amended under House Bill 2545. The statute that counsel has pointed out, as I recall, was amended in 1983. It establishes the crime of endangering the welfare of a minor, subparagraph B, permitting a person to remain as a Class A misdemeanor. What House Bill 2545 does in the amending of 545 is it takes the crime and puts it more in focus as what it really is, which is child neglect. It also increases the penalties from merely a Class A misdemeanor to a Class B felony. The allowing a child to remain in a place where unlawful activity is involved does not clearly address the problem that we have within 2545, in that 2545 is meant to address and focus upon the fact that there are, especially in Section 1, it's an instance where there are controlled substances actually being delivered or manufactured. The difference is, and the most important aspect of that, is we are dealing with drug activity that involves sales. We're dealing with drug houses and instances where there are often weapons present. There are often, as Lieutenant Bunnell discussed earlier for you, indications of intravenous drug use, narcotics, paraphernalia, and hypodermic syringes are left in and around where the children can pick them up and injure themselves. And also, and not to be de-minimized by any sense, where we're talking about the manufacture of clandestine drugs and the manufacture of methamphetamine. Clandestine methamphetamine laboratories have been responsible for explosions, severe fires. I've had one case involving methamphetamine where the case could not be prosecuted because the lab cook actually burned himself so badly in the fire he ultimately died. There were children that at the time, luckily, were at school, not in the residence, but they had been living in the residence as the production was going on. Not only is there a risk of fire and explosion, but there is a severe risk of mental and physical damage from the chemicals involved in the clandestine process. I'm sure the committee's aware that now when law enforcement deals with a clandestine methamphetamine laboratory, they put on rubber suits and they put on oxygen tanks and masks, and they call in what's called a hazardous materials team, and they get the hazardous materials team to dispose of the chemicals because they are so volatile and so hazardous to human health. That's the reason for the change in child neglect and the request for the child neglect statute to put it way over and above what endangering the welfare is and make it the Class B felony. The other additions and amendments just fall into line from there from delivery and manufacture down to possession, and then ultimately the neglect statute as written.
Thank you very much, Mr. McIntyre. Questions? Representative Vice Chair Mason.
Ms. McIntyre, you certainly don't pull your punches on this one. You've got it at a Category 9 on the sentencing guidelines. Is that right?
That's correct.
And Category 9, so you equate this with rape in the first degree, assault in the first degree, kidnapping in the first degree, arson in the first degree, and burglary in the first degree?
Yes, sir, Representative Mason, we do.
And this crime would be defined as you leave the child or allow the child to stay. For instance, if the child was in a room of the house and out in the living room somebody sold somebody else some marijuana, that would you would that would make it a crime. The crime of leaving the child in the house then would exceed the crime that occurred in the house. Is that not right?
Yes, Representative Mason, that's correct, Mr. Chair. The reason for that is, as you look, we have a line of 16 years and below, and the intent is that we are going to severely sanction individuals and adults who engage in the kind of criminal activity that severely endanger the life, health, and welfare of their children. The person selling I have handled at least two felony murders that were occurring because of a marijuana deal. One was a marijuana grow operation, and the other one was a drug ripoff situation. That type of conduct where people kill each other is the kind of conduct we're trying to sanction, and because there's a minor in the next room, we think that they should be held responsible.
Well, Chairman, you slipped around, you very conveniently slipped around my hypothetical. My hypothetical was just a marijuana sale in the next room. I know you suddenly wanted to go into felony murders and botched drug deals and all kinds of Miami Vice stuff. But that's not what the hypothetical was. The hypothetical was a marijuana sale in the next room. And again, your testimony is that you want, if there's a marijuana sale in the living room, you want the mother of the child to be held criminally liable at a level tantamount to that of kidnapping and rape?
Misdemeanor. Mr.
Chair, yes.
Let me ask, using that hypothetical,
in your face here.
Well, using that fact situation, if this is the first offense of that particular parent, what would the term of incarceration be, if any?
You have me, Mr. Chair.